Good morning and welcome to the Monday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. It's the 15th day of June 2020, and my name is Peter Wickham. It's good to be with you. Good to be with you on a Monday morning, no less. A surprise, surprise. Well, I guess it is fortuitous that I have the opportunity to chat with you on this Monday morning, because there is so much that needs to be discussed and so much that I need to throw my two cents worth in and hear the reactions from you on. So I'm happy to be here this morning. Miss Michelle Brathwaite is the technical guru this morning. So that is the lovely voice that you will hear when you call to chat with me. She will intervene if you fall short of the expected standards on this program. And Michelle tends to be very strict, so much more so than Dennis. So brace yourself. As is the case with most, as is the case with many women, they adhere strictly to the letter and the rule. So there we go. Of course, my name is Peter Wickham. You don't have to, I believe that you may know or recognize the voice by now. And we are continuing until 2 p.m. So we have lots of time to talk about. I notice that we have some fireworks business going on after 2, which is a good thing. So we haven't lost all of Crop Over. So here on this station, you will have a bit of the format. So first things first, Black Lives Matter. I have been silent, relatively so, on this issue. No particular reason why. I support the cause. I support the cause 100%. I did not march on Saturday, and that had largely to do with the fact that I'm still not yet 100% comfortable with the large gatherings in public. And that's just a personal thing. But I am happy, certainly, to associate myself spiritually with this whole idea of the Black Lives Matter movement and all that it means. Let me just say, though, that the specifics regarding Barbados, and this is a point that I've had to make to several people as I've discussed this issue, while I have no problem with the American cause, I think that in Barbados we need to understand the situation is very different. I go back to my training as a political scientist and certainly political theory and the teachings of Karl Marx that I would have been exposed to both in sociology and also in politics. George Beall and Christine Barrow being the two individuals that would have been responsible for that exposure. Marx didn't really see race as an issue. What Marx saw was the underlying issue of economics. And when I've had to discuss my views on this issue in the context of people who, many of whom are European, and I have to make the point often that the challenge that we have in Barbados is a bit different, because we are not a minority in Barbados. We have been a racial majority, and indeed we have had political power in this country for years and years. So the question of us having crossed the Rubicon as the Americans did in the last election, the one before, when they elected a black man, those issues are not really relevant for us. We have different struggles. Our struggles are for economic power and so on. The critical thing that Marx would have argued, certainly if he were to comment on an issue like this, is that the oppression of black people in America has less to do with the fact that they are black and has more to do with the fact that blackness represents a lack of economic power, which ultimately is a symbol for powerlessness in a more general sense. If we were to take that analysis to Barbados, I have argued long and hard, and I was so happy that Andrew Pilgrim made that point. We have an issue with the police in Barbados that stretches back, but you know what? It's both sets of black people. The police are black, the people who are taking advantage of are black. I remember in the 90s when we had a critical problem in this country where people were being charged with murder, they would go to court, and the only evidence the police had against them was a signed confession, where people are apparently confessing to having murdered someone for which the only penalty is hanging. And of course, people would claim the police held them, they beat confessions out of them and whatnot. So we moved to the level of videotaping evidence and things of that nature to ensure that that type of thing would not happen again. But it wasn't that long ago that we had an issue with a gentleman who mysteriously jumped off a cliff in St. Lucie. We had another one who turned up dead in a prison cell. And then there are the unknown and untaped and unreferenced incidents, like the one I'm telling you about now, where I received a call from a young man who I had guardianship of some years ago. in the still of night from a police station because he had been arrested by a police female police officer and charged for assaulting her. He was picked up along the side of the road, riding a bicycle with a friend, in the wee hours of the morning. She seemed to have thought he was up to something, searched him, found nothing in his bag, and then proceeded to rough him up. Sprayed the boy with mace, and then when he reacted as any person would react when they were sprayed with mace, she charges him with assault. He is trying to assault a police officer who is in the company of another police officer with a weapon, and he's foolish enough, unarmed. I think the only arm that he had with him was two condoms in the bag. That was the sum total of his ammunition. He is attempting to think. And he said to me, "Peter, am I an idiot? Why would I do something like that?" I had to explain to him that the police in Barbados, just like the police in the United Kingdom, just like the police in Trinidad, in United States of America, they know who they can do foolishness with and get away with it. And as a result, that's what they do. And that's what Andrew complains about all the time, Andrew Pilgrim QC, when he talks about the way that certain types of people are treated in this country. And it's not that they are black and we are white or whatever. It is about the fact that the police seem to be able to identify powerlessness and they take advantage of it in many instances. And I say the worst thing that could happen to a person is that the person is born poor, because it seems as though the police have this uncanny ability to identify not only the poor, but the powerless taken advantage of. And that's the way it goes. You look at the situation of people who are of the LGBT community, gay people, a big part of the reason why they're discriminated against is because they lack power, and in many instances, economic power. And when you look at the people who are on the front line of this abuse, the transsexual community, the sex workers and whatnot, I mean, generally speaking, they don't come at me. They go at people who they believe have lack power and they take advantage of. And that's the case with discrimination, period. It's not just the police. It goes outside. Generally speaking, you discriminate against people who you believe lack power. The church is responsible in many instances too, because they also go after the powerless. And I know Michelle is a Christian, so I'm sorry. But the reality of the situation is that they usually go after the powerless. The woman who is with child and out of wedlock, presumed to be powerless, because of course in Barbados we know marriage is an institution for people with money. That's the way it has always been. So we have a challenge in terms of our society. The police are sadly on the front line of it, but it permeates. And there are several instances in which we have to stop and ask ourselves, is the problem that we are discriminating on the basis of race, or is the problem really that we are discriminating because we believe the person lacks relative power? And that is the problem that we have to address in this country. So when it comes to this question of Nelson, there has not been any doubt in my mind for years that Nelson needs to move. Nelson is there because we came along and saw Nelson and presume that he should stay there. My concern with Nelson relates to the fact that a person who is immortalized in a statue is there because that individual means something to society. Nelson means nothing to me. And indeed, Nelson represents something that I abhor. There is absolutely no basis on which Nelson should be in Bridgetown in a pride of place. I would never suggest that Nelson be dumped in the sea. Nelson should be in a museum with the cat and nine tails. I ain't saying throw away the cat and nine tails either. The cat and nine tails is there with all the other instruments of oppression. They're placed in the museum because a society can never forget its history. So we need never to forget that there were a set of misguided people at one stage who collected money and put Nelson there because they believed that he represented something that they wanted to aspire to. Those days are over. So Nelson should go. And I find it ridiculous that in 2020, after putting thousands and probably even millions of people through the University of West Indies over the years, we have, it's just thousands, hundreds of thousands. We have been still engaging in this conversation. We have written our own history books. We have written our own history. We have the Caribbean Examinations Council. And we are still debating whether or not Nelson should be in Barbados. Nelson should be moving in the museum long time. So that's my perspective on this whole Black Lives Matter issue. I'm clear in my mind that we need to not only look at the issue of race, we need to look at the way it permeates and speaks to other aspects of the way that we treat people. And the police in Barbados have a problem. In the United States of America, everybody has a camera. And that's the reason why we're seeing all of this stuff that goes on. There was no camera on the cliff in St. Lucie when that guy apparently jumped off because he had an epiphany. There was no camera there. But it doesn't necessarily mean that something suspicious did not go on. So I'm anxious for the police to have body cams. I'm anxious for them to be taped regarding the various things that they do from time to time, because I do believe that we have excesses that have to be taken care of, and that's the point that Andrew Pilgrim was saying. I want to talk also about the St. Kitts election. I also want to talk about the Guyana election, but Dennis has always told me to keep my remarks at 10 minutes, and I'm now on 11. So let me just say, in summary, congratulations to the government of St. Kitts and Nevis, which is led by Dr. Timothy Harris. He has been interviewed in this program already in years past. Of course, he was associated with the Labour Party back in 2015. He crossed the floor. He's won not only his first, but his second election, and this time he's won with an increased majority. Hats off to him. St. Kitts is heading in a completely different developmental direction, and we can discuss the implications. The situation in Guyana is scandalous. I heard 3 months ago, I believe it was, of an election that was concluded. And at the end of the election, the government said they were happy with the process. The opposition said they were happy with the process. The vote count was going very well. And when it got to Region 4, halfway through, somebody took ill. And then after that, we have a new spreadsheet that was introduced, relaying information that appeared to be a fiction of his imagination. Mingo has not yet been forced to say where he got that information from. But we have had a recount. Tremendous resources from different islands and from the overseas community have been poured into that recount. They took almost 30 days to recount all of the votes that have been cast. And they have come to the conclusion that the statement of polls that were released by the PPP Civic were the closest to authenticity regarding the outcome in that election, and that the PPP Civic got more votes. I am now hearing from President Granger and Co. that those data need to be set aside because they have had an epiphany and they have now discovered that the information that was collected by way of the ballot was riddled with errors. And then we have the scandalous situation where a commissioner of elections, someone entrusted with the responsibility to administer elections, is saying that his own agency, GCOM, failed regarding the ability to produce credible and transparent data, and that he was presenting information which they collected and they supervised and they managed, and he did not believe it could stand up to scrutiny and it should be disregarded. A scandal of the highest proportion. And then I am being told that Dr. Raf Gonzalez, who is saying that if you get less votes, you have lost. And that is what President Granger needs to understand. It's no different to what Mia Motley said. Every vote counts and every vote should be counted. Dr. Gonzalez, the incoming chairman, he has a different style. And he said it in a different style. And I have absolutely no difficulty with it. Because ultimately, as brothers and sisters in the Caribbean, we are the guardians of democracy in each other's country. If a situation occurred in Barbados where somebody got 75 votes and the other person got 100 votes, and the person who has 75 said, the only way you would accept my figure, or if you don't accept my figure, I'm going to say let's have over the election. I would expect people in the Caribbean community to ask what is going on in Barbados as well. It's not unreasonable. I remember Gonzalez when he was having some issues with the way that our prime minister was not communicating. I had the same issue. Dr. Gonzalez raised concerns and said, look, you know, things seem to have changed in Barbados because it was having implications for the management of CLICO. Look, I could go on. It is 40 minutes past the hour of 10. Michelle is shaking her head already, so let me go to some calls. Remember, the call number is 434-1790. You can also use the WhatsApp chat, 266-IVOB, or you can email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. I'm here with you at your service until 2 p.m., Let's talk and say good morning and welcome to the first caller.
Hi, good morning, Peter.
Morning, sir. Hey, Glenn. How are you doing?
Good, man. It's refreshing to hear some of your comments today.
Yeah,
I mean, when you got into the marks and that kind of analysis, that's not kind of thinking and that philosophy that you hear about being used about these days.
Especially not from me. That was probably the part of the learning in politics I was slowest to absorb.
But it is useful for people to be exposed to these concepts and these principles, because it helps them to understand the world and history and events and whatnot. But for far too long, we've not had enough people coming forward, especially people in the academic community, and explaining and putting things in that kind of context. I think it's useful. I was really very, very glad to hear it. Very glad to hear it.
Thank you, sir.
But I want to deal with some. You're talking about discrimination and isms and whatnot, and you know from your training, an ism is an addition to a word that has to deal with the philosophy or thinking or behaviors or whatever. So you have communism, Marxism, capitalism, et cetera, et cetera. But there's another ism that is not really receiving enough attention in Barbara Sim concern. And David hinted at it last week, Friday, when he was talking about not getting caught up with distractions or the other issues that need to be addressed. And he talked about the elderly. So I like to talk about ageism. Mm-hmm. Ageism being the stereotypical and the prejudicial behavior extended to people who are in senior people, old people, elderly, what you may call it, and in a way that is injurious to their well-being, their enjoyment in life and whatnot. And I think that while we have a Ministry of Elderly Affairs, and while we trot out the cameras and talk about, we talk about how we have an aging society, we have one of the highest per capita rates of centenarians in the world, et cetera, et cetera. That's good stuff. But on the ground, I have enough information. It hasn't happened to me much, because if I go into any people try to push me around, I always speak up and speak out and stand up, especially when my money's concerned. So,
They recognize you too.
But I go places. I don't ever expect any treatment. I just want fair treatment.
Face, they will recognize you and they will understand which God is serving.
But that apart, I think we need to. We need to develop a philosophy where words about how we treat our elderly is more than just cliches and platitudes or whatnot. I think we need to start develop a conscious. As in the same, we have developed a consciousness about discrimination. By the way, I agree with most of your remarks about the historical development of Barbados. I see a lot of the battles that people are wanting to fight, we've already either won or nearly won them. We fought them and virtually conquered them in Barbados. Like you said, it's no more about economic power, et cetera, and those kind of things. Down some of the broader issues that apply to North America and whatnot. So I'm with you on that. But if you need to develop a conscious philosophy where it is taught and extended and exposed to children, because that's the generation you have to start to influence. I am horrified, really and truly, that I've spent my life studying, observing human behavior, et cetera. And I find that human beings are only few creatures in the world that pass on to society, that want to pass on to society to the young, untried, untested, and experienced. And we have this almost hero worship of young just because they are young. And sometimes when I get engaged younger people and they tell me, as a young person, I say, what does that mean? What have you achieved by being a young person? I said, there's a physiological process you go through. There's you, from infancy, you get a young adult, and you move. But that's a part of the maturation process of life. So I don't think that while we need to treat everybody the same and look at their worth and give them opportunities, I don't think we need to bend over backwards to worship at the feet of youth. But then those persons seem to develop by they have a period just because they are young, and I think that feeds into. I don't know if you ever met some young people. So I see young people treat older people as though they're invisible.
Right. And as you say, the youth is wore like a badge, as though that's.
Yeah, that's an achievement. If you don't die in infancy, presumably you will develop into a youth, but that does not make you anything. I observe chickens. I observe dogs, cats, kittens. And monkeys in my neighborhood. I see that the young are always held back. The young are there learning and observing and being taught by older persons. And I think, therefore, that is something. We have to consciously go beyond just, we have a Ministry of Elderly Affairs, but we need to go beyond just providing goods or service or treatment to create an attitude, a value, for all the people that is demonstrated in our attitude towards our treatment of in an everyday basis, mm-hmm. day by day. Because in some societies, especially African societies and some of the Oriental societies, the older people are revered and appreciated for having lived and contributed, right? And having experience that they can pass on to others. They must have learned something during the younger days. And I would like to see where BARP. I think BARP is ideally placed to do that. BARP has a membership. Obviously, I'm a life member. I was one of the early members. BARP has a membership of 27,000 or 30,000 people. I would like to see them move, and they do a good job in what they do. I think they've come a long way. They've developed into a worthwhile, important institution of ours. I want to see them become more activists. They have the resource, they have the numbers, they have the image, they have the reputation, they have the community. They can now take on the activism of the elderly, the activism of age, and help to lead this campaign against ageism, the discrimination of people on the basis of the age, the stereotypes that suffer from the tragedies that they're exposed to. I think that it does sound that BARP can extend its mandate, go into a new era. I think it's gone past what they've done. Mm-hmm. You know, they've done what they've done well. I think we need to step it up a bit more and take it to a different level.
Okay.
All right? I'll talk to you another time about some politics.
Good observations to start with, and I thank you very much. And certainly the idea of discrimination against the aged, it is certainly very consistent with the kind of remarks that I made. Some time ago, when I did a study was really being done for the HIV/AIDS and the impact of discrimination on LGBT communities, the two most acceptable forms of discrimination that people said were still acceptable was discrimination on the basis of age and on the basis of religion. People felt that discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation was more abhorrent than discrimination on the basis of age. And that's something that has always worried me, that we do not seem to see age discrimination is not sexy in the way that other forms of discrimination are concerned. So there are two elephants in the room where discrimination is concerned, age and size. I have not done any research on discrimination against persons who are slightly more portly. You're not one of them, Glenn. But I haven't done that research, but I get a sense, certainly as I have conversations with people, that the last bastions of acceptable discrimination relate to age and size, even though religion was mentioned in that regard. But as I said, I wouldn't necessarily include that. But that's my take on it. So yeah, so maybe sometime we can chat more about this phenomenon. Don DeBrastocks, good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Hey, morning. How are you doing?
Okay, thanks. There are three issues I'd like to discuss with you, but I would like to look at Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
Why would a people want to hide part of their history?
Would they want to what?
You say that Nelson should be placed in a museum.
Right, yeah. Uh-huh. Why ain't hiding it?
So what's wrong with, if he's placed in a museum, only a few people will be able to see him?
No, you could go, you want to see him? Anyhow, you make your point. I disagree with you, but you make your point. Let me not stop you from making
your
point.
I'm saying that people should be able to face their history, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that Barbados is one of the only few Caribbean countries that never changed hands? And if Nelson had not won the Battle of Trafalgar, Barbados would have changed hands to the French.
Sir, I'm sorry, because the good taste conditions require that I not laugh at a person on this program. But so you still believe that nonsense?
What?
I'm fascinated to think that there are people in Barbados that actually still believe that the only benefit, or the main benefit that Nelson brought, is the fact that I am not French. Let me ask you this. If we were French, what difference would it make? If you and I were speaking to each other in French?
I don't think it would make any difference.
But I know, so then what's the valid value of the point, sir?
Barbados has the distinction of never.
But sir, that's not a distinction, but they're saying they'd be happy about. Bermuda has always been thing too. Bermuda has always been British. What's the point? And indeed, it's still British now because it's still a colony. That's something to be proud of.
All right. So
what is the benefit to me as a Barbadian to know that Barbados has always been British? If Barbados had been French, it would mean a difference to me because I would have been in slavery the same way. And this idea that you have, sir, I'm sorry to be so impassioned about it, but I get annoyed when I hear things like this, because you should know better, quite frankly. We have a cat of nine tails in the museum. You think that they should bring that out and use it too? Because that's part of our history that we need to face. So maybe we should have a cat of nine tails erected in the middle of Trafalgar Square as well.
All right. So
what? I mean, sir, are you really thinking about what you're saying?
Well, I mean, if I'm
sir, you about celebrate what I'm you celebrate your heroes, okay?
Nelson,
you celebrate your heroes. Nelson is not our hero.
If he did not win the Battle of Trafalgar, you wouldn't be our hero. The people who put him there.
Sir, that is historically inaccurate. And quite frankly, the fact that you're saying it is offensive to me. It's offensive because it's a silly point.
All right.
There's no value in that argument because it lacks historical depth. It's also not true.
It's not true that Nelson won the Battle of Trafalgar.
Sir, if Nelson didn't win the Battle of Trafalgar and all of us were French, what difference would it make? You see, you are suggesting to me that being British is something special, and you're elevating Britishness to something special, right?
Being British don't make no difference
because all that you saw were property the same way. If you were French, it would have been property. If you're British, you'd have been property. And I must tell you that the French departments now, which are the French colonies, are treated far better than the British colonies. So you go to Martinique and Guadeloupe, and you can argue that the French seem to have taken care of their colonies far better than the British did with theirs.
I am telling you that Nelson...
Sir, you are not telling me anything that I have not heard already. And I'm saying to you, you owe it to yourself. And you owe it to the young people who are listening to you on this program to do some research and understand that there's nothing magical about being British. Because you are not British.
I am not saying anything about my being British until the people at the time recognized Nelson for what he did, and that's why they put up the statue.
All right. So you think that we should have a statue of thing too?
Awful. Awful.
Of the cat of nine tails. We should have a thing of the cat of nine tails.
The cat of nine tails is in the museum. What do you want, a statue of that?
But then let me put it out on display if you want to face the history.
If you want to put it on display, you could put it on display.
You want to face the history?
So,
let's do that.
Okay. Following your argument, should we demolish the public building and replace it by a park, the King Jaja, because slave owners sat in that public building?
Sir, on that note, I think we should go to a commercial break. I am going to lose it, and I don't want to lose it on this program. It's too early. It's a bright and early Monday morning, and I feel that it is too early for me to be losing it with you. So I want to thank you for your contribution this morning, sir. I do suggest that you spend the next few days reflecting on what you have exactly said and doing some reading. This is Down to Brass Tacks. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. We're off to what I would say is a controversial, not so illuminating start, but let's see how it goes. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
I am hanging in there.
You called to put me right regarding Nelson, too?
No, I called in to put the situation in perspective.
All right, go ahead.
First of all, the Trafalgar is a Spanish name.
Okay.
The Battle of Trafalgar took place by Cape Trafalgar, which is the southern part of Spain. The battle didn't take place in the Caribbean. Nelson's statue was put up by the plantocracy because the French and the Spanish were planning to take over, to go and take back Jamaica. And in the area of the Saints, some islands called the Saints near Dominica, Admiral Rodney, you will hear about Rodney Bear in St. Lucia.
Mm-hmm.
Admiral Rodney was a British admiral, and he attacked the combined French and Spanish in the area of the Saints and defeated them, which meant that they could not go and to take over or take back Jamaica. The planters in Barbados, because I am sure that they have a statue of Admiral Rodney in Jamaica, because he's the person who had save them from the French and the Spanish. And the planters in Barbados decide that they're going to put up a statue of Lord Nelson. That's what it is. But you know the history. They got the money to put together and to put up a statue. And there was a statue of Lord Nelson in Barbados before a statue of Lord Nelson was in London. And the point is, Lord Nelson have little or no relation with Barbados. But people could argue that Barbados was a colony of Britain at the time, and he was a top British admiral and so on. And they put up, but they only went around and put up that because the Admiral Rodney Victory and against the French and the Spanish, where he protected Jamaica. But some people, the truth is, we are not dealing with a history. We are not dealing with Barbadiana. We got some of this in and out things like scattered shots. Because first of all, when Trafalgar Square name was changed, it was Parliament Square. But you know, the relief Trafalgar Street, which is still there, would sign up the street that runs from White High Street toward the junction there with Marhill Street. The sign is still up to Trafalgar Street. That should have been changed to Parliament Street. That didn't happen. And so we got in that area now at Bridgetown. And some people say that they're saying that the statue of Lord Nelson is not in Hero Square. There's some technical division to say that it is not in Hero Square. I've been on the bandwagon for removing that for years. But then it was turned around. Mm-hmm. I think at that time the statue was to be moved. And then some people with power in this country that want the statue to remain, all they do is turn it around. That is all they did. And that is some. But we need to correct that the same way that we need to move Joseph Chamberlain's name.
Right, from the bridge. But let me not deal with Chamberlain now, though. Let me deal with... I understand. You've said that before.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with you.
Same things.
I know, but the thing with the statue, to me, is like, yeah, with the statue. I'm saying that we are continuing to have these conversations, and you just went into a long, detailed explanation as to, you know, why it shouldn't be there and so on. But to me, the logic is really very simple. Do we celebrate Lord Nelson as a country? Do we celebrate him? If we don't, then he had no right being there. And you know what? There are lots of statues all over the world that he had no right being there, but they're there. You take the necessary... Precisely. And I think that instead of pulling it down in an unceremonious way, he should be lifted off the pedestal and taken and put in the museum. The museum got a big courtyard. You could put him in the middle of the museum. You can name that Trafalgar Square if you want to. You know, I don't really see the problem. But I just don't understand why we have had such drama regarding the decision to move him in the first place. Why should we be discussing this thing over and over and over again?
Because if we don't do that, nothing would happen.
Well, what you thought of this last caller that I had just now, saying that it's because of Nelson that we're not speaking French?
He don't know the difference. He don't even know what Captain Falcon is. He don't know where the name comes from.
Is it tip to what?
He just hear people say something and he say,
you see,
he don't know that Trafalgar is a Spanish name and not an English name. A lot of these people think that Trafalgar comes from England. It's from Cape Trafalgar to the southern tip of Spain. Mm-hmm. And these people need to understand these things. So you've got to keep repeating, repeating. You've got the old bridge, the Queen Victoria, when the Queen Victoria Bridge was in a bad state of disrepair, it was replaced, but not the name Errol Barrow, but the name of Charles Duncan O'Neill on it. And that is the man who said that Colonel Wisdom Wickham is to help him. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he would have gone back to Trinidad with Cipriani. Remember, Captain Cipriani, he was the mayor there. And remember though, when Charles Duncan O'Neill returned from Scotland, he did not come back to Barbados. He was in Trinidad working with Captain Cipriani. Mm-hmm. I had not for Wickham. Therefore, I am saying that the two names should be on the two bridges in Bridgetown. Mm-hmm. But I guess I must go.
No, you don't have to do that.
I gotta keep talking.
We've made some progress under similar administration. Let's hope that under Prime Minister Motley, we will be able to advance on some of these issues. My understanding is that we should have some indication this week, as soon as this week, regarding the direction that whole Nelson issue is taking. So I think that is something about which I'm very excited. I've heard rumors, I should say, that we may have some action on it this week. So in terms of some direction as the way we're going, not necessarily like I'm picking up a movie on Saturday, which I would be glad, to be quite honest. So I won't go fancy next week looking at Nelson. Yeah. You ever saw the one in London?
Prison.
You ever saw the one in London?
You mean Nelson call him in London?
Yeah.
Only in
pictures
of it. I never been.
Yeah, no, they have hoisted him on I think he's on a horse, and he's almost a mile up in the sky. It's a big tall column, and the pigeons,
right?
The pigeons is making go wrong, man. It's making hoop.
Well, the pigeons, these, but a lot of people, I noticed they don't deal much with Barra statue.
Yeah.
But if you go to Caracas, you will see how they got the Liberator.
I know the person. I'm trying to remember the name now.
I can't remember the name now, but the Liberator statue in Caracas.
Yeah, it's celebrated.
Right. And the pigeons on that.
Yeah. The other thing in London is that there's Nelson's Column in Trafalgar Square,
right.
And you can actually walk not far away, and you can see a statue, a life-size statue of Mandela. The diversity of London in that you can have statues in that geographical space of so many great people, you know, because they have other heroes, as they call them. The difference in Barbados is that they have two single statues in Bridgetown. One is Barrow and the other one is Nelson. And I find that that's an offense. If it was a situation where we had dozens of statues, you know, knocking around, it would mean something. But in a situation where you really only have, I think in the country we have, what, four statues? The one in St. Thomas, the one of Sir Grantley.
Sir Gary, right.
The Granny Adams statue, that's right. Yeah, that's, so then it would be about five. So we have about five or six statues in Barbados. And the fact that one of them is Nelson is a cause for concern. If we had, say, 50 or 60, it wouldn't be no problem. But it's about five or six statues.
You need a statue of Clement Payne, too. Yeah. He created a watershed in the history of this country.
I'm anxious.
In 1937, right.
I'm anxious to hear Auntie America on this issue of statues and effigies and so on. So hopefully he will call today. And we can have a chat about, you know, what we're doing about statues. Because he has a friend who has been very active in making statues, you know, of his own, of different people like Mighty Griner, you know. So anyhow, we'll talk about that. Thanks a lot for calling, sir. Appreciate your words of support in this issue, or words of clarity in this issue. Down to Brass Stats, good morning.
Good morning to you, Mr. Wickham. Good
morning, sir. How are you doing? This is Patrick.
Yeah, of course it is.
So, sorry, somebody's reminding me that the Liberator is Simon Bolivar. My apologies, sir. Both myself and Mr. Wiggins were struggling to remember Bolivar's name. That is really not a name that one should forget. He is known as the Great Liberator, so Simon Bolivar. Yes, Patrick, good morning.
Good morning. I really can call this morning because after seeing a video in circulation with the president of the Democratic Party, I don't know if you would have seen it.
I started watching it and stopped.
About the bill to order a salary cuts.
I started watching it, but I stopped.
But that's what I really want, David, because really the truth is, right? I want to hear the president of the Democratic Party's voice on the Auditor General report. That's where I'm anxious to have a conversation with the president of the Democratic Party, and she can better help us to understand all of the nonsense that took place from 2009 right back down
I differ to you, because what I want to hear Verla DePisa on is I want to hear her views on this nomination process, because I really don't know what's going on in DLP as far as nominations are concerned. All I know is that we are heading towards the end of this year, and I have heard precious little about who has been nominated. I suspect that people have been nominated in private. I'm hearing a rumor now that Michael Ashley has been nominated for St. Philip North again. I don't know how true that is. I don't know. Can you shed any light on that?